Back here on hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase, along with D-Mace, here on 102.5 The Game, ESPN Radio Nashville. Willie Donick, former NFL great Derek Mason, here with us. We've been talking about a lot of stuff, plenty going on. We'll have our bubble update a little bit later this hour. And as the SEC tournament gets going, we'll let you know what to look for there. What about the automatic bids that were sealed up last night? What to look for leading up to Selection Sunday? Chris Mason will join us at 1 o'clock, but we're going out to Denver. Benjamin Albright is with us from KOA Radio. He's a Broncos insider, and boy, do the Broncos have some things going on out there. Benjamin, I'm sure this last 24 hours has been unreal for you here. So I'm just curious, on a show like this, right, out there on KOA, what's the reaction been?
Well, it's elation, you know, after suffering through the apocalyptic wasteland of post Peyton Manning here in Denver, the Mark Sanchez's, the Trevor Siemians, the Paxton Lynch, Joe Flacco, Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater, fans here are super stoked about having, an air quotes, real quarterback in Russell Wilson. It's somebody that, engenders hope about a playoff pursuit and maybe even a Super Bowl.
Well, there's no question about it. So I guess when you get down to the practical part of it, about what the price was, how do you feel as an analyst? Was the price worth it?
Well, I thought it was going to cost more, to be honest
really?
With you. I thought it'd be another premium pick. I mean, the players they gave up are kind of throw-ins. Noah Fant had already been lapped by Albert Okwuegbunam on the depth chart. Drew Locke is Drew Locke. I think we've all seen him play. And, you know, Shelby Harris is probably the biggest piece in terms of the player. But, you know, I mean, you can replace his productivity. So, you know, 2 1s, 2 2s, and a 5, and get Russ and a 4 back. I mean, I thought you were going to have to give up another 2 or 3. So for me, I'm okay with it. There are some people out there going to say it's too much, but at the end, nothing's too much to pay if you get a Super Bowl. Just ask the Rams about Matt Stafford.
Yeah, you're right about that. They were able to, the Rams, we know what they had to give up, but then ultimately they end up winning a championship, which everybody, you know, wants at the end of the season, every NFL team. This deal is not quite like the Peyton Manning deal, because Indy had already moved on for Peyton. They had released him. So Denver didn't have to give up anything to get Peyton, and they were able to keep that core group together. That defense was fantastic. This isn't the same way. You know, they got Russell, but they had to give up the draft picks. How do you think this all plays out? Because to me, it's totally different. I know they won a championship with Peyton. They went to 2 Super Bowls. They won one. But do you see it ending up the same way?
Well, I think it's a tougher. I think it's a tougher road. I mean, you look at the AFC right now, and it's obviously the spirit conference. You still got Kansas City in the division. I mean, we're talking about a division that's got Mahomes, Herbert, Carr, and Russell Wilson, and that might be the most loaded quarterback division of all time. Oh, by the way, you still got Buffalo, Baltimore. You know, you got Cleveland. You got good teams in this conference. So it's a tough road for Russ. You know, it's a little bit different in a couple of ways. You know, Peyton was coming off that injury, and at the time, you know, everybody thought that he might not get back to being Peyton Manning. So there's, you know, they didn't have to give up assets back then for Manning. Giving up those assets and watching George Payton's track record last year, his first draft class, it was a great draft class. Giving up those assets stings, but, you know, I think this is a team that, if it had even competent quarterback play last year, was a playoff contender, and they just couldn't do it. They were one of the worst teams at converting on third downs. They couldn't push the ball vertically, and teams knew it. And so, you know, I think a guy like Russ, who per Next Gen Stats, one of the best deep ball throwers over the last 5 years, I think that changes the dynamic.
We're talking with Benjamin Albright, KOA, Broncos insider. Now, bringing up the GM, George Patton, what is the timetable with this deal in regards to winning a Super Bowl? Is the owner going to give him some leeway because of what he had to give up to get Russell Wilson? Or is it, hey, listen, we want immediate, you know, we want some immediate wins right now. We want to be in a championship this year, because everybody's looking at what the Rams did. They were able to do it in 1 year. And granted, it's not the AFC, but it's the owner thinking, we need to do this very quickly.
Well, we won't know who the owner is till the team's officially sold, and that should come around May. As it sits right now, it's in a trust. I'll tell you, internally, the sentiment is they're in the window already. Like the window was started last year, and they felt like that team last year, number three defense overall. You look at the young running back they got, Javonte Williams. You look at all the talent they have across the board. They felt like they were a competitor last year, and they just again didn't have the quarterback. So they feel like putting Russ in with the talent that they had last year, they feel like they're in the window. They feel like they're a playoff caliber team that if they get hot at the right time could be a Super Bowl contender. So I think an owner coming in and looking over this roster is probably going to demand pretty immediate results.
It would certainly stand to reason you have to feel like you have a shot to give up the first and second round picks down the road here. So Benjamin, you would always hear this over the last, I guess, year and a half, when the conversation about Aaron Rodgers would come up, is if he's changing addresses, is it going to be Denver? So take us back to last offseason. When do you think they turned their attention to Russell Wilson? And did you think at some point that Aaron Rodgers was the one that they were trying to make a play for?
Well, they were. Rodgers was plan 1A, and I'll give you the whole timeline. Last year, that report on draft day that came from Mark Schlereth that they'd already talked and had a deal in place for Rodgers, that was nonsense. In fact, they hadn't even officially talked. That's back channel stuff, but they hadn't even officially talked. Rodgers wanted out of Green Bay at that time. He wanted Denver. Denver wanted Rodgers. Green Bay just wouldn't pick up the phone. They called the bluff, And so Rodgers and Green Bay worked it out. Rodgers was telling his teammates all last year, probably going to Denver next year, all that kind of stuff. And right around Halloween, a tip came into Denver that Russ wanted out of Seattle. He'd been wanting out of Seattle for a while, but he wanted Denver if he got out of Seattle. And so that tip just kind of sat there and hung in the ether. And you fast forward to the end of the season, beginning of this season, Broncos are all in on Rodgers, and Russ is plan B. Right around the Senior Bowl, I guess, the Broncos started figuring out that Rodgers was going to be headed back to Green Bay. That was confirmed to them a week ago Sunday that he was headed back to Green Bay. That decision was made. I know Rodgers claimed it was recent, but it was over a week ago. And at that point, they started laying the framework down, getting this deal done. So about two weeks ago, they put the framework in place. They told Seattle, hey, when Rodgers announces his decision, if he goes back to Green Bay, we got ourselves a deal. And sure enough, yesterday Rodgers announced, they pulled the trigger, and there it goes.
So part of this equation was Russell Wilson had an interest in Denver and has understood that that was a destination possibility.
Yes, he had a no-trade clause. Matter of fact, Philadelphia and Washington both made significant offers for Russell Wilson, and he nixed those. He said he would not go there or waive his no-trade to go to either Philadelphia or Washington.
So tell us about his contract now. Where does that go from here, and how do they do this? And, like we've been talking about with Aaron Rodgers, part of the equation is you want to have a great team around you. At this stage of his career, he's made a lot of money. You want to be fair, but you also want to leave the team room to go get the players around him to be successful.
Yeah, well, he's got 2 years left on his deal. It's actually really friendly relative to what he brings to the table. I mean, it's $24 million this year, $26 million the next that the Broncos will be on the hook for. For a quarterback of his stature, that's about half of market value since Rodgers has just reset the market. So they're going to want to get an extension done with him, but you're going to want to keep those team-friendly numbers in place as long as you can while you're trying to work some of this other stuff. Problem is, the other thing is the Broncos are very young. They got a lot of guys on rookie deals right now. I mean, they don't have a whole lot of big money deals tied up in veterans outside of maybe Justin Simmons. So, they can afford to give that kind of stuff. They've still got like $30 million in cap space right now.
Now, the other player that sort of came up, and it was by his own doing, his tweets, Von Miller. Do you see him coming back to Denver? I mean, won a championship with Denver, defensive player of the year with Denver, arguably one of the greatest pass rushers, and all that time was spent in Denver. Can you see him coming back?
It's possible, but I don't think it's probable. I think Von's doing the Von thing that he does, which is negotiate through the media, get the fans all behind him and get that support. Von knows he's going to have a robust market. The Rams want to bring him back. The Chargers want to overpay him. I can't see him taking a haircut to come back to Denver on what is probably his last big money deal. Coincidentally, the first time he's actually hitting free agency. So I don't see him back in Denver. It wouldn't shock me if he comes back, but if I had to bet a steak dinner on it, I'd bet the steak dinner he doesn't come back.
And interesting take there. So what about the rest of free agency? As you mentioned, you know, they are probably in a pretty good position compared to some other teams, and we talk about it a lot here with the Titans, difficult choices to make with the salary cap. So what are their needs? What are they looking for in free agency?
Well, they need two more edge rushers, one depth, one starter. You probably see them take a run at Hassan Reddick. I know they were kind of eyeballing Landry before that deal went through. So I think they want to put somebody opposite Chubb. I think they'll get the other one from the draft. They've still got five picks inside the top 115 picks, even after dealing all those picks. I think that they're going to look for some corner depth. You know, you've got Surtain and Darby, but they're going to let Fuller and Callahan go, so you're going to have to get one more corner there to pair up with Ojemudia and Bassey at the bottom of the cornerback depth. Inside backer, they let Josie Jewell and Alexander Johnson hit free agency. You might see one of those two come back, although they like the guys they've got, Baron Browning and Micah Kaiser and Jonas Griffith. So those are the main things. And you got to find a replacement for Shelby Harris. Dealing him to Seattle, that was the biggest piece of that trade. They're going to have to find a replacement for him. And right tackle. Whether or not you bring Bobby Massie back, you got to find a long-term answer. So those are really the soft spots on the Denver roster.
As we let you go, and so you think he will play Russell Wilson at his current contract? Do you think they'll just play it out with that, or do you think he's asking for a new contract now that he's got a new team?
Oh, they'll be working on a new deal, but I imagine that he will play under the number that he's currently on for this season, and I imagine they'll get an extension done before this season ends and get him long-term.
Great stuff. Benjamin, thanks for joining us. I know you've been really busy the last day or so, but I can feel the excitement coming across from Denver. Wow, AFC is going to be a lot of fun this coming year. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
Benjamin Albright, KOA Radio out in Denver. When we come back, we'll sort of sort through this, and we'll kind of ask the question. Let's take a look at that AFC right now. And, of course, a lot of things have to shake out here, but, man, you better bring it. You better bring it in that conference. Stay tuned. We're listening to Darren Donick and Chase along with D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you. So we just got the scoop from over in Denver, Mace, and I got to tell you, there's a lot of optimism. And look, I was flashing back to last summer when the Titans made the move for Julio Jones. You can't help but just get soaked up in the excitement. And when he put in perspective the names of the guys that have been quarterbacking for that team since the end of the Peyton Manning era, it's
not a who's who.
It is not. They have not had any production there. So they are thrilled to get Russell Wilson. And what I didn't realize is how much cap space they also have. So, you know, is the optimism warranted? Like, where do you see the Broncos? Like, we still have just about a full off season here. They still, as he made it sound, like they still have some picks to help improve the roster. They didn't trade every pick that they have. So they can still address some needs there. And they've got money to spend in free agency. So is it worthy? Can he elevate them? Are they really a Super Bowl contender?
I think they are a contender to make the playoffs.
I think that's very realistic,
yeah,
for sure. But
now,
that's another
Bowl
thing,
contender,
Super Bowl contender. Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know what, I guess they're in the same boat. Okay, if you're looking at both of the teams, you know, and just say from what the Titans have done over the last 3 or 4 years, and the Broncos have done in the last 3 or 4 years. Which team do you think, even with Russell Wilson on their team, because we're not just talking the quarterback, we're talking about the team in its totality, head coach and everybody, GM, space under the cap, draft picks, everything. Which team is in a better position to win a Super Bowl?
There's so many unanswered questions for both teams because we still don't know what the roster will look like when they actually take the field next year. But I would say,
based on what happened last year, and you're just adding Russell Wilson to the mix,
I still like the Titans myself.
Okay, so if the Titans...
And I'll tell you why. The division they play in.
Yeah, I think the Colts will be better. I think Jacksonville will be better.
I agree with you on Jacksonville. Absolutely, will be better. Mm-hmm. How much better is the question? Are you sure the Colts will be better?
I think they will be.
Who are you projecting their quarterback to be? That's my question for you.
Shoot. I know it won't be Wentz. I tell you that.
So you're convinced that what they're saying, they're going to back up that.
Yeah, I think they're done with Wentz.
Because remember, there was a time where people were saying Aaron Rodgers is gone. He doesn't want to play for the Packers. They don't want, you know.
But I think
with Wentz, I think they want to move on from Wentz, but there is a practical issue of, number one, who is the next guy, especially with Wilson out of the picture. And there is a price to be paid for releasing Wentz.
Yeah, there is.
And do you end up better at that position? That's the question for the offseason for the Colts.
Okay, it depends on who they get at quarterback.
Right.
Now,
okay, so
obviously Deshaun Watson is still out there.
See, that's the next one, yeah.
You know, he has a court date on Friday that will determine what charges are filed, whether it's a felony deal or just a civil suit with the, you know, his alleged victims. So I guess that it depends on that. But if everything stays status quo, I do pick the Titans to win the division.
Okay.
I don't think it's as easy as it was last year,
so
but I still pick them to win the division.
Okay, so given that, what's your answer to the question?
It's a
good question. Titans or Broncos?
I still think the Titans are in a better position.
Okay.
To win a Super Bowl. Now, people are probably listening and say, oh, no, they're not. Ryan Daniel. I get that. I understand. But, you know, and I'm only going by what Mike Vrabel said. He said people need to be a great around him. Okay? I think guys will elevate their play, and then they will surround him with more players. Will they win a Super Bowl? I don't know. But I think they will be in a better position to win one than the Denver Broncos at this point in time. Now, things can change.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking now, I think the Titans, because these guys have been together, they understand it, they've been there before, meaning in the playoff run, AFC Championship game, I just think they're in a better position to win, to put themselves in the Super Bowl. Not to say they will get there, but if we're just talking them and the Broncos, I'm picking the Titans over the Broncos.
I foresee... Part of this equation is that Derrick Henry is back to something reasonably close.
Mm-hmm.
Still a great player. Maybe not his best season ever, but still can be a game changer. I see an AFC that is stacked with a lot of very, very good teams. I don't know that there is a juggernaut world-beating team on there. I'm curious what the Chiefs look like next year.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of whether some of this, you know, Patrick Mahomes and his contract, you know, you got to figure at some point that's going to affect the depth on that roster. And I know that they definitely push the cap number back as much as they can. They play the games with the cap to try to give themselves a chance. You know, what do the Bills look like? Are they going to be better? But I see a deep field, but I also see, you know, right, we know it stings here. But the Bengals made a run in a very deep AFC. They were not a team that was supposed to win last year. I think it's going to be very similar next year as I sit here right now. I think there will be a lot of teams that contend, and if you can get into the playoffs, you have a chance.
Yeah, you do.
And that's why I would pick the Titans in your question. I think the Broncos will be better. They can't help but not be better. But they're under the impression that all they need is the quarterback. They've got everything else. I don't know if I go that far.
And listen, we're not in Denver. So we don't know the inner workings or what's really going on. But from what we've seen from the outside looking in, they do have holes to fill. I mean, I know we talk about Sutton and Jerry Jeudy, but last season wasn't the greatest season for any one of them. But then people will say, well, because they didn't have a quarterback. And I get that part, too. I truly do. But, again, playing for 15 years, give me a quarterback and they can throw the ball. That's all I need. If you're talking about my production, just give me a quarterback and throw the ball. Now, obviously, I have more than that, but just give me a quarterback that can give me the ball. That doesn't mean, you know, unless he's just horrible, which they probably were in Denver, then obviously we can't do as much. But I'm not basing my production solely on, you know, as long as he can get the ball to me, we're good. As long as we're on the same page, we're good. But I know it takes more than that if you want to take a team and elevate them to a Super Bowl. So, I mean, I just don't see the Broncos at this juncture having the pieces necessarily. Again, they've come out the house. Now they're playing along with everybody else. But I don't see them as a true Super Bowl contender.
That'll be something to watch for in this offseason, too. How does that perception go from now on the day that they have him to the beginning of next year when all the predictions start coming out? Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll talk a little college hoops. We'll show you what's going on. We'll tell you what's going on with the conference tournaments. We'll update the bubble. And we will set the table for tonight in the SEC tournament. Vanderbilt plays against Georgia. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. It's 11:30. Time to check the bubble. The bubble watch here on 102.5 The Game. Speaking of college basketball, there's a little something you might want to know about here. The NCAA tournament is right around the corner, and it's time for you to sign up and play the official Game Bracket Challenge. Brought to you by Coach's Corner Sports Grill in Spring Hill, Days Delta 8, and Wager. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracketchallenge or the Game Nashville app right now and sign up to play. Brackets will open after the teams have been selected on Selection Sunday. Speaking of that, Elijah Campbell, first, let's update the bubble last night on the automatic bid. Some interesting notes from the little guys, as Dickie V likes to say. Dickie V, by the way, got some good news.
Very good news on the Dickie V front.
He's cancer-free for the moment and he's battling.
Absolutely.
So here's the Dickie V. But he was saying, let the little guys in. Give them a chance. Remember?
Hey, it was a big night for the little guys last night. And a lot, we can start in the CAA Towson, who was the regular season favorite, leading the regular season, won the regular season, was the one seed in that tournament, upset by the Delaware Blue Hens, a.k.a. the Fighting Joe Flaccos. They upset Towson, and as a 4 or 5 seed in that conference, will be representing the Colonial there for that conference. Obviously, since we last spoke, the SoCon was decided, Tennessee Chattanooga beating Furman. And what is the game of the season so far? Overtime, they went to Mike Bothwell, hit a layup with 4 seconds left. UTC had a timeout to burn, but Coach Lamont Paris elected not to call it.
I still can't believe that.
I'm a huge fan of. Even though I thought they could have gotten a better shot, too.
It was a terrible shot.
I didn't like the inbound pass at all. You got to make that inbound pass near half court.
They did a lot of things that certainly were not by the book and not how you would draw it up. Because if you don't call timeout, as you said, you've got to advance the ball further than they did. He just basically threw it into the guy at the foul line and said, go get
it. Away. And David Jean-Baptiste, who has been in the conference longer than any coach in the SoCon, has been in the SoCon, hits a contested 30-footer, double-teamed to win the game. Fantastic finish. Tennessee Chattanooga, I have as a 12 seed, squaring off against Ohio State as a 5. That would be a potential upset right there.
Okay, now, no one's gonna wanna play UTC. Did you see the shot that the guy hit for Chattanooga?
It was unbelievable. It was a unbelievable.
If you're Furman,
you played it better than you.
There's no way.
You had 2 guys on him. They did exactly what they should have done.
Other than blocking the shot, I don't know how, any other way you could have played that. I mean, the guy was just like, he fell to the ground like, are you serious? What do you say to that guy? You can't say anything to him as a coach.
Oh, no, you can't. I mean, so it's funny because someone screenshotted that at the peak of his shot. The ball is leaving his hands. There's 0.8 seconds left. He is double teamed. He is 30 feet away from the basket.
Not even like squared out. Yeah,
falling away. Someone screenshotted that and said, Furman lost this game. It is unbelievable, especially considering the Paladins have not been to an NCAA tournament since 1980.
Oh, my heart goes out to Ingle Martin.
The Fighting Ingle Martins have not been dancing in a long since the Miracle on Ice. They have not been dancing.
Wow, that's a long time.
And they were one miracle shot away from going back. Tough loss for Furman, so they will not be in as a one bid league. So the Mocs, the Fighting Terrell Owenses, get that one automatic bid for them. Last night in the A-Sun, Bellarmine.
Very interesting story here.
Scott Davenport's Bellarmine Knights, a team that is only in their second year of being D1. Of course, the rule is you have to be in D1 for 3 years to participate in postseason play. It is a horrific rule. It is an embarrassing rule. And not only does it keep Bellarmine out as the A-Sun champions, it keeps Jacksonville out, and Jacksonville State, the team that was that Jacksonville beat to get to the championship game, will represent the A-Sun in the NCAA tournament because they won the regular season.
So, Derek, I had crossed off Jacksonville State when they lost in the conference tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to have to redo my sheet because they have new life.
Premature.
What a weird rule, though. They actually are sitting in a room rooting for one team. They know if one team wins, they're done.
Yep.
If Bellarmine wins,
they're in.
They're in. So they became the biggest Bellarmine fans in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Who aren't going to the school, I guess, and so they're in. What a weird way to get into the tournament. But they were the regular season champ, and so that's maybe the best that league has to offer, maybe.
The only automatic bid that is awarded to a team that lost their last game. It is a very weird situation. But last night, very much so a potential Cinderella out of the Summit League.
Yes,
The Jackrabbits beat North Dakota State to get not just the Summit Championship, but win number 30. They're 30-4 this season.
And, you know, it's interesting. If you look at the history of 30-win teams, even from the smaller leagues, from the mid-major leagues, low-major leagues, they tend to do well. They tend to do well in the tournament.
Tend to do
like
very well.
Murray State has had a couple of those teams. You know, like weak schedule, just annihilating everybody, getting to that 30-win state. Those tend to be dangerous teams in the playoffs.
Wise words from a coach that I had in high school. So no matter who you're playing, winning is a habit. And if you make winning a habit, you can make it happen against other teams. South Dakota State has definitely made winning a habit. I have them as a 13 seed playing against 4 seed Arkansas. That would be a juicy matchup against Arkansas. Arkansas team, I think, could be susceptible to a loss.
D-Mace,
like
you taking notes on your brackets here? It's a potential, you know, everybody's going to ask you next week, hey, who do you like? You know, who are those 12, 13 seeds you like, D-Mace? Who, you know? So the Jackrabbits, they have been there before.
They have. Right?
They are a good program. Not Jackrabbit Jenkins. Now, think about that. That could happen. There could be news on Jackrabbit Jenkins for the Titans on the same day that the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State are playing.
Pull off an upset, potentially.
That could be. Which is the headline? Which Jackrabbit?
Which Jackrabbit wins today?
Sounded like Howard Cosell.
Exactly. That's the only time you hear about these schools during Mirth Madness.
I know. That's
their Super Bowl.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Like we had a conversation not too long ago with Scott Corley about what's happening down the road with Division I athletics in general. That's one thing that, boy, you might miss more than anything else if they reclassify and create a fourth division or separate the Power Fives, all these things that are getting tossed around there. What would we do without the South Dakota State versus Arkansas or Norfolk State, Coppin State, you know, all these teams that we get to see?
The Cinderella stories will make the postseason product what it is.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
Another, it's kind of a Cinderella here, right? State beat Cleland State in the Horizon League title game last night. Cleland State, a favorite to win that conference.
The
Wright
Vikings.
State made a run. And Wright State pulled away with a big win. A one-point win in the championship game last night. A thriller. And then in the Northeast, for the first time in program history, the Bryant Bulldogs are going dancing as they annihilated Wagner, a team that had several big wins on the season, including a big quad one win against VCU in November. Wagner looking really good was my favorite to win that conference.
Yes, we disagreed on that one in our original bubble watch because I had the Bryant Bulldogs.
And you were correct. The Bryant Bulldogs not only beat Wagner, they beat it by almost 40. Strange game, too. A fight broke out in the stands, which delayed the game for 30 minutes.
And this involved parents of the players?
I believe it looked like parents because people sitting behind the Wagner bench, right? And someone's getting heckled.
Oh, no.
Someone runs into the stands to fight students. So a brawl breaks out. One of the players for Wagner had to be held back because he tried to enter the stands and get involved. Really ugly scene. Delayed the game 30 minutes. At that point, it was 4.5 minutes left in the game. Wagner was getting beat by about 40 points. It got ugly, but they finished the game without incident, and Bryant could officially punch their ticket into the dance after that one.
Bryant was winning 38-12 at the half. So what kind of seed are we looking at for Bryant? 14, 15?
For that league,
maybe
it's really
15.
Hard to tell because Wagner would have been able to be a 14 or 15 because they have a significant quad one win, but I have them as a 16.
So they could be in the dreaded 16 hole.
They could be, which I've always thought. Do you want to be in that as a team? Would you like to play a play-in game and say, well, you can say you've won a tournament game, or do you want to be the lamb that goes to slaughter?
What do you think about that, D-Mace? If you're a 16, would you rather just get the straight up shot at the number one, or would you rather play in the first four against another 16 in the spotlight and maybe get a chance to get a W?
Give me a number one.
You just said you want your shot at number one.
Yeah, because I mean, you beat the 16, you still got to play the number one anyway. You know,
yeah.
You still got to play them. So give me the shot right now.
Now, when UMBC beat Virginia,
they did not
have to play in that game, right? They got the straight up shot at mm-hmm. number one. So the only 16 that ever won, that's how they did it.
They did not get first four.
They did not have to play in the first
exactly.
four. Okay.
I don't want to be all tired out, you know, playing a 16 seed, then have to come back and play the number one seed. What if one of my bigs get hurt, man? Come on.
That's true. That's okay. true.
Fair enough.
But a team who's not going to be a 16 seed, the Gonzaga Bulldogs clinched the WCC last night, avenged their St. Mary's loss on February 26, and will more than likely be the number one overall seed. I have them as the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament when the bracket is unveiled on Sunday. And then lastly, the Fun Belt. The 9-seeded Louisiana Raging Cajuns almost made the miraculous run through the Sun Belt tournament, but 3-seeded Georgia State came away with a win without Ron Hunter as head coach. But a thrilling game in the Sun Belt. Georgia State comes away with that auto bid. So that's all the auto bids we have to date.
All right. When we come back, we'll look at the big tournaments, the big Power 5 ones, the SEC. We'll talk about Vanderbilt and Georgia tonight. And their prospects in the SEC tournament. We'll look at the bracket. We'll give you a scoreboard update. The ACC tournament is actually going on as we speak. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren Donick, Chase, and D-Mace here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up at noon will be Alan Bell from Sportsline. And we'll talk to him about a number of things. He certainly will be very interested in the NCAA tournament coming up next week. But also, he had some very interesting tweets while it was all going down yesterday, that trade for Russell Wilson. We'll get his thoughts on how the odds changed in the AFC based on all the maneuverings yesterday. We're just getting started here. We got plenty of offseason going for the NFL, but we'll pick his brain coming up at noon. Then at 1 o'clock, we'll have Chris Mason, and we'll talk Preds. Speaking of the Predators, when they have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45 with Robbie and Rex Road. So be listening for that. Predators back in action tomorrow night against the Anaheim Ducks. Now, back to the Bubble Watch. Let's give you a scoreboard update on what's going on right now. Syracuse in the 2-3 zone in the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, 46-24 leaders over Florida State right now. So that's the 8-9 game. Both of these teams are going to have to win this tournament to get into the NCAA tournament, but they play on. So the orange is out there. The only other game going on right now, Sacramento State. D-Mace, if you were desperate to put down a bet or something and you wanted to wager Sacramento State against Idaho, you could do that. Two teams that are 6-14 in regular season play in the Big Sky. Right now, Sacramento State leads by 10
in the second half. The favorite to win the Big Sky Conference.
See, Elijah's full of info, isn't he?
You sure I can bet?
Well, that one I wouldn't touch, but I would bet on Montana State to win.
Sure I can bet? Okay. Make a bet?
Okay. No. The big conference tournaments will get going. We mentioned, Elijah, earlier, the Atlantic 10 tournament is going to be a really interesting one to watch. That gets started. That's one, you know, finishes on Selection Sunday, right? They always have their game usually on CBS
pretty early
on to get it going. And sometimes, depending on who makes the final of that, it is going to affect at-large bids because you might have a team that's sort of unexpected getting to the finals. I maintain that you're going to see one of these two teams get in there, VCU or Dayton, on the same side of the draw. I don't think either one of them are a shoe-in by any stretch to get in as an at-large. But one of them might be playing in that title. I think probably will be playing in that title game.
They should be, barring any upset. Dayton prone to the upset. VCU, well, the way VCU plays, they have one of the best defenses in the country, one of the worst offenses in the country.
That's a unique thing about VCU. If they were to make it to the big dance next week, that's something you would keep in mind with their if they were to make it that far. Let's talk Vanderbilt for a moment. They play in the SEC tournament tonight against Georgia. Beat Georgia twice. Certainly wasn't easy either time. But supposedly, I've checked with a couple people on this, I think there's a chance they get Rodney Chapman back in there tonight. But, D-Mace, you know this. When you have a hamstring problem, it could go at any time. Right?
Yeah, you're right about
like
that.
Like, he can't wait any longer. He's got to try. But the question is it going to hold up? It's happened to me. Like, you feel like you're better. You jump out on the court, you start playing. You're okay for a while, and then whoop.
You make that one little step. Yeah. And there you go.
And then it's then you're back to square one.
You're out for the next game.
So that's something to watch. We know when they've had Rodney Chapman in there and Liam Robbins, they become a much different team. A much, much different team. Liam Robbins continues, as we thought he would, to get better and better. He helped them get the road win at Ole Miss. So I heard Joe Rex Rhodes say this morning, and I agree 100%. Boy, it would be disappointing to lose this game tonight against Georgia. And that being said, you know, it's hard to beat a team three times, all those things. It's a neutral court. Anything can happen. But, man, they need to win this game. They need this game to give themselves a chance against Alabama, who they just played right to the wire, came up short without Chapman. Of course, the miracle would be he plays well and they make a nice run and maybe, just maybe, squeeze out an NIT berth.
I think if you beat Alabama, I think the NIT is going to be looking pretty hard because they like to have schools from the SEC that don't make it in. And right now you're looking at Texas A&M, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. Yeah. Those are the schools that the NIT is going to be looking at because they're not going to make it. I don't think they have a shot unless they win the conference.
And as we found out with Belmont last year, I think Belmont should be in the NIT. It's not as easy to make the NIT as you think, right? You're thinking, who makes the NIT? That field fills up very, very fast. They squeezed Belmont out last year, and Belmont won, what, 25, 26 games last year?
There could be bid thieves for the NIT, too, because the automatic qualifier for the NIT is winning the regular season. So if a regular season champ goes down in these mid-major tournaments, then there can be opportunity for one of those teams.
So, D-Mace, you might sit there and be thinking, and if you're listening, you might be thinking, isn't it sad you're begging for an NIT bid? But if you're Jerry Stackhouse and you look at the last three or four years where they won six games total in the league, the last three seasons, one of which he wasn't the coach, an NIT bid would be a nice step forward. That would be a nice way to keep your team playing, keep, you know, get some momentum going, keep developing some guys. Progress.
As a head coach, that's what you want, progress. Sometimes that progress leads to a national championship. Sometimes it leads to a berth in the Field of 64. Sometimes it leads to NIT berth, which, you know, if you're a team that's only won six conference games in the last few years, that's huge.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. And it can be a springboard to better things. That's what you hope for. So that's what's going on for Vanderbilt. Now, what's interesting is Tennessee's on that half of the bracket as well. You think Tennessee, Elijah, has a chance to be a two seed if they have a good SEC tournament. So they await who comes out of Vanderbilt, Georgia.
Kentucky actually does. I read that backwards. So Kentucky will play the winner of Vanderbilt, Georgia / Alabama, and Tennessee will await the winner of Mississippi State and South Carolina.
Aha. So Kentucky is on the half. So Kentucky is going to play Alabama, Vanderbilt, or Georgia in their first game. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. So Tennessee will wait the winner of Mississippi, South Carolina, and then, of course, Kentucky will wait the winner of Alabama versus presumably Vanderbilt because Georgia is very bad. But possibly.
Well, I'm not presuming anything, but that's Coach Willie speaking right there.
Presuming doesn't belong in March.
I'll give you another one to watch, D-Mace, the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. You got a very top-heavy league, and that lends itself to somebody making a run and getting to the finals. So if there are a couple upsets there, and the teams to watch, UCLA, USC, and Arizona. Now, Arizona may be enough of a juggernaut to just wipe out everybody, but if somebody pulls a big upset there, You bet. If you're a bubble team, you're watching that conference tournament very, very close.
Teams like Utah, Arizona State.
Would love that, right? That league would love to get an extra team in there. They've had too many years, the Pac-12, where they're only getting like three teams in there.
And this year, it looks like it's going to be that case too, unless Oregon has a lot to play for
as
well.
They're
if
a bubble
Oregon
team.
Makes a run in there, they can steal a bid from somebody, especially if they beat a UCLA, which would be their third win against UCLA this year, or USC or Arizona. Can almost lock them in.
Also, with the ACC going on in Brooklyn, that's another league that would love to have somebody make a run and jump up in there to grab another bid, because that league is not used to getting less than, like, some years we're talking about the ACC getting like nine teams in there. They'd be lucky to get five this year.
Oh, if they get five, it's a miracle. If they get five, it's because someone like Florida State wins it or wins the tournament.
Well, Florida State may be done after this game, the way they're playing against the 2-3 zone of Syracuse.
Down big.
They are down big. All right, that's our bubble update. We will do this again on Friday when we really get to the meat. Now, there's going to be a lot of meat Friday. So the bubble really hasn't changed in terms of who's in, who's out the last few spots. We now know that Gonzaga is the automatic. St. Mary's will be an at-large, but we knew that already. So there's really nothing that has changed in terms of bid thieves or anything. So Friday, we'll have an update on the bubble. When we come back, we'll go back to football. We'll talk to Alan Bell. We'll talk about wagering. We might even mention the Calvin Ridley thing. We'll get D-Mace's thoughts on the Calvin Ridley situation because, man, you talk about a volatile topic and one that opinions are all over the place. Now that gambling has been legalized, now that the sports leagues have partnered up with all these gambling companies, what do you think of the Calvin Ridley situation? A full year suspension? Yes, it wasn't a great decision by Calvin Ridley, but ethically, morally, what do you think? Is that the right amount of punishment? Should the punishment be looked upon differently than it was back in the day when it was more taboo to do that kind of thing? We'll discuss on the other side. Stay tuned. This is Darren, Donick, and Chase, along with D-Mace, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.